stays the same. Therefore, it is necessary to stop identifying transient feelings as yourself. Ignore thoughts. They are merely endless rationalizations of inner feelings. No matter what is going on in life, keep the steadfast intention to surrender negative feelings as they arise. Make a decision that freedom is more desirable than having a negative feeling. Choose to surrender negative feelings rather than express them. Surrender resistance to and skepticism about positive feelings. Relinquish negative feelings, but share positive ones. Notice that letting go is accompanied by a subtle, overall, lighter feeling within yourself. Relinquishing a desire does not mean that you won't get what you want. It merely clears the way for it to happen. Get it by osmosis. Put yourself in the aura of those who have what you want. Like goes to like. Associate with people who are using the same or similar motivation and who have the intention to expand their consciousness and to heal. Be aware that your inner state is known and transmitted. The people around you will intuit what you are feeling and thinking, even if you don't verbalize it. Persistence pays off. Some symptoms or illnesses may disappear promptly. Others may take months or years if the condition is very chronic. Let go of resisting the technique. Start the day with it. At the end of the day, take time out to relinquish any negative feelings left over from the day's activities. You are only subject to what you hold in mind. You are only subject to a negative thought or belief if you consciously or unconsciously say that it applies to you. Stop giving the physical disorder a name. Do not label it. A label is a whole program. Surrender what is actually felt, which are the sensations themselves. We cannot feel a disease. A disease is an abstract concept held in the mind. We cannot, for instance, feel asthma. It is helpful to ask, what am I actually feeling? Simply observe the physical sensations, such as tightness in the chest, wheezing, a cough. It is not possible, for example, to experience the thought, I'm not getting enough air. That is a fearful thought in the mind. It is a concept, a whole program called asthma. What is actually being experienced is a tension or a constriction in the throat or chest. The same principle goes for ulcers or any other disorder. We cannot feel ulcers. We feel a burning or piercing sensation. The word ulcer is a label and a program, and as soon as we use that word to label our experience, we identify ourselves with the whole ulcer program. Even the word pain is a program. In reality, we are feeling a specific body sensation. The process of self-healing goes more quickly when we let go of labeling or giving a name to the various physical sensations. The same is true with our feelings. Instead of putting labels and names on feelings, we can simply feel the feelings and let go of the energy behind them. It is not necessary to label a feeling fear in order to be aware of its energy and relinquish that energy. The healing of multiple diseases. In the case of this physician, there were so many illnesses all at one time that it was impossible to remember them all. When giving a lecture, it was necessary to list them on an index card. All of the following illnesses were occurring at age 50. Migraine headaches, chronic and frequent. Blocked eustachian tubes. Painful earaches. Nearsightedness and astigmatism. Trifocals were prescribed. Sinusitis. Postnasal drip. Allergies. Dermatitis, various types. Gout attacks, necessary to carry a cane in the trunk of the car and to have a restricted diet. Cholesterol problem, further restrictions in diet. Duodenal ulcer, chronic and recurring for over 20 years, unresponsive to all medical treatments. Pancreatitis, intermittent attacks precipitated by the recurrent ulcer. Gastritis, hyperacidity, intermittent pylorospasm, therefore further diet restrictions. Colitis, recurring. Diverticulitis, an appendicitis-type condition of the colon, sometimes hemorrhaged, requiring hospitalization and blood transfusions. Common problems at the lower end of the gastrointestinal tract, scheduled for surgery. Arthritis of the cervical spine, neck. Displacement of the fourth cervical vertebrae. Low back syndrome, necessitating chiropractic treatment. Vibration disease, Raynaud's syndrome. Loss of sensation and impending gangrene in fingertips due to loss of circulation. Middle age syndrome, coldness in hands and feet, loss of energy and libido, and depression. Pilonidal cyst at base of spine, curable only by surgery. Bronchitis and chronic cough, aggravated the headaches, spondylosis, and low back syndrome. Poison ivy sensitivity. Skin broke out every year. Sometimes required hospitalization. Athlete's foot. There was the belief system that it came from hotel room floors. Dandruff. There was the belief system that it came from being in a barber shop. Inflammation of the cartilage. Tietze's syndrome. A rare disorder, with painful swelling of the junction of the rib and sternum. Dental and gum problems, loss of bone around the base of teeth. Surgery was recommended for the gums. Overall energy imbalance. Kinesiologic testing revealed that all of the energy systems were out of balance and every meridian tested weak. In retrospect, it is mind-boggling how the body kept on going in the world and functioned as well as it did. Inasmuch as each of the disorders required a further restriction in diet, there were times when lettuce and carrots were about the only safe foods. This led to the loss of 25 pounds and a body that looked thin and haggard. Later, some friends revealed that they had made bets on how long that body was going to last. Most of them estimated that it would probably keel over at about age 53. The inner question at the time was, how could a successful, highly educated professional man, functioning creatively in the world, leading a balanced life, who had been thoroughly psychoanalyzed and experienced many modalities of therapy and healing, still have so many physical ailments? Yes, there was a large workload, but it was balanced with physical exercise and creative work, such as carpentry, masonry, woodwork, and architectural design. Moreover, the spiritual life was active, with 2 hours of meditation every day, before and after work. The endless techniques mentioned in the introduction were investigated: self-hypnosis, macrobiotics, reflexology, iridology, polarity therapy, affirmations, astral projection, group intensives, bodywork, relaxation, and so on. What was the answer to this strange paradox of someone who had tried a multitude of techniques, groups, and therapies, but who still had a staggering array of illnesses? Also, how was it that he operated so successfully in the world despite this long list of illnesses and the constant pain that went with them? The answer seemed to be a very strong will. It carried him through all obstacles and had the power to push aside anything that interfered with that effective functioning, in this case, primarily, feelings. With that kind of willpower, when a feeling was suppressed, it stayed suppressed. The scientific ideal is objectivity. Objectivity means an absence of emotion. The achievement of this ideal, in clinical and scientific work, necessitated a suppression of feelings. This was especially intense given the nature of the clinical practice, which was with severely ill people. The extent of their suffering and that of their families seemed nearly endless. It went on relentlessly, day after day, year in and year out. The intensity was compounded by having a compassionate nature and being attuned to people's suffering. The mounting pressures of suppressed emotion in all areas of life obviously contributed to the multiplicity of illnesses. At a certain point, both the mechanism of surrender and A Course in Miracles were investigated and applied to daily life. Because of the busy work schedule, there was very little time for any new techniques. Happily, the workbook of A Course in Miracles requires the simple contemplation of a sentence or lesson throughout the day. The power of this technique is the alleviation of guilt by utilizing the mechanism of forgiveness. The mechanism of surrender could also be done silently throughout the day as an inner process. The two tools worked together. Surrendering and forgiving went on simultaneously during the day. Once the mind knows the way to alleviate its inner pressure, like Pandora's box, it begins to let all the garbage up, and up it came in profusion. Thoughts and feelings, which had hardly been noticed at the time of their occurrence, now returned. Life had been so busy that there had not been the time to handle them. The decompression process began to unfold on its own. One immediate discovery was that every negative feeling or thought is associated with guilt, and this guilt is so all-encompassing that it is constantly being suppressed. Thus, there is no such thing as just anger. The actual feeling is anger slash guilt. There is guilt every time we have a critical thought about someone. The mind's constant judging and criticizing of the world, its events and people, is an unending source of guilt. Guilt itself engenders negative feelings, and negative feelings in and of themselves also engender guilt. It is that deadly combination which pulls us all down and creates such widespread illness and unhappiness. The guilt is so omnipresent that no matter what we are doing, we feel somewhere in our mind that we should be doing something else. We have lived with so much guilt for so long that we don't even recognize it anymore, and somehow that guilt is projected by the average mind onto the world around it. That is why most people need an enemy, an object on which to project their inner guilt. It is also where tyrants get their power, by manipulating people's guilt and finding a satisfactory target for it. There was also the discovery of a disdain for feelings. Anger surfaced at the imposition of feelings, which can make a person feel like a victim. To a left-brain orientation, feelings were the opposite of reasonableness, logic, and rationality. Superimposed on this was the male chauvinist idea that emotions were for women, children, and artistic types. Feelings had been primarily a matter of intellectual understanding and clinical analysis. When they came up internally, they had been labeled, pigeonholed, and filed away. At the beginning of working with the letting go technique, there was a period of rebellion and actually hating the feelings and experiencing dread over having to deal with them. It seemed degrading to have to suffer through them. This required a shift of self-concept because of the strong identification with the intellect. Now, like it or not, it had to be acknowledged that everyone is a thinking-slash-feeling organism. It would not work to keep denying reality. Before long, it was okay to have feelings. With the letting go technique, the only way out was to acknowledge and relinquish the feelings. This became easier as the physical conditions started to improve. Although it can initially be difficult to face feelings in ourselves, the light at the end of the tunnel had shown itself, and this engendered hope. Within days of using the technique, the physical condition at the lower end of the gastrointestinal tract promptly healed itself, and in fact, the surgery was canceled. Many of the symptoms that had been active for years, even decades, began to diminish in intensity and frequency as the months went by. Migraine headaches, in particular, became less and less frequent. Lower back pains disappeared. The body began to feel lighter and stronger. Then, an unexpected crisis came that brought intense emotional pressure. The diverticulitis returned in a severe form with massive hemorrhaging. There was an inner decision of great magnitude. Either this stuff works or it doesn't. So this time, instead of going to the hospital and getting transfusions, there was complete surrender. All of the sensations going on in the abdomen were acknowledged and not resisted. They were not given a name or a label. Instead of thoughts or words, there was a sense of oneness with the sensations, the cramps, and the pain. There was no resistance to the sensations, no matter how intense. Like being on a razor's edge, every sensation and feeling was recognized and surrendered. This went on for 4 solid hours. At the end of 4 hours, the bleeding stopped, the cramps went away, and the diverticulitis was healed. Later, there were some minor recurrences, but each one was handled in the same way, and eventually the attacks subsided and disappeared. So the mechanism of surrender passed the acid test. It succeeded where everything else had failed. With continued application, other disorders began to fade away. Over time, the experience of knowing replaced thinking. Knowing comes on in a totally different manner. It is just standing there for our recognition. One morning upon waking, there was the knowing of being cured of poison ivy. At the same time, it was obvious that the very name, the label poison ivy, was a program and a belief system in and of itself. In any case, there was the knowing of being immune to poison ivy, even when going outside, touching it, playing with it, and putting some of it in a flower pot to carry to an interview program that evening. The subject of the interview was the power of consciousness in self-healing. Another episode of knowingness occurred one day when unexpectedly confronted by intense insecticide fumes. Such fumes had been a severe allergy for many years and invariably triggered a severe migraine. On this particular day, however, there was the sudden knowing of immunity to fumes. Walking into a recently fumigated home and taking very deep breaths of the fumes without any consequences at all, a sudden elated feeling of freedom prevailed. How wonderful to be free and to experience the power of mind. It was obvious in that moment that we are only subject to those things that we hold in mind. It is not necessary to be a slave or victim in the world. The same thing happened with a long-standing belief about elevated cholesterol. As the belief and concept of it were canceled, eating dairy products was resumed with no negative impact on cholesterol. In fact, blood testing showed a progressive lowering of unhealthy cholesterol levels. Moreover, food intolerances and allergies disappeared. It took at least another year, however, for the sugar intolerance and functional hypoglycemia to disappear. For a period of time, it would still recur under periods of stress, especially physical exertion, after eating sugar and sweets accompanied by caffeine. In the meantime, it was possible to return to a regular diet after many years of severe restrictions. How freeing to eat foods with seeds, not allowed with diverticulitis. All the foods that were supposed to be contraindicated for ulcers and colitis, and even hot fudge sundaes. It took a couple of years for the functional hypoglycemia to disappear, but eventually it was possible to eat all of the sweets that had been forbidden for years. The whole middle-age syndrome was a belief system as well. As this belief system was canceled and surrendered, the coldness disappeared from the hands and feet. The fatigue, mild depression, and irritability also disappeared. Physical stamina increased, and the tolerance for physical work became almost unlimited. Now that the more major things were out of the way, some of the minor ailments were consciously addressed. The belief in pilonidal cyst was surrendered. In 6 weeks, it disappeared. The eustachian tube, which always blocked when flying in airplanes, caused severe pain in the right ear. It took 2 years to correct itself. There was a continual letting go of all thoughts and feelings about it, and at the same time, the use of visualization in which the angle of the canal with the right temple bone was pictured as changing to a normal angle. This was the only ailment with which visualization was used. At the end of 2 years, the ailment disappeared, and there was never any further difficulty in clearing the ears with changes in altitude. In the meantime, the neck pains were progressively disappearing, and this made dancing possible. While dancing and surrendering any resistance to the neck pain, soon the body began to automatically put itself into self-healing postures and movements, as though there were an inner chiropractor manipulating the spine. It was an uncanny sensation, as though invisible healers were realigning the spine. As this was going on, there were changes in circulation occurring in the hands and feet, and they were no longer cold all the time. The vibration disease in the fingertips, which had been threatening gangrene, now reversed itself. The pads on the fingertips swelled back out and turned pink again. The burning pain in the fingertips disappeared. Sensation returned. Up to that time, the fingers had become so numb that it was not possible to turn the pages of a book. As the more serious ailments were healed, there was the energy and time to look at even more minor issues. There had been a long-standing belief that people catch dandruff in barbershops. When that belief was surrendered, the dandruff disappeared. A similar process occurred with the belief that correlated athlete's foot with hotel room floors. Upon continual cancellation of that belief, athlete's foot disappeared. At Thanksgiving time 1 year, there was the opportunity to test the technique in an acute situation. A huge log dropped on the left foot and broke all the bones across the whole forefoot. Instead of rushing out to get a cast, the letting go technique was used. By Christmas, it was possible to return to the dance floor. At a later time, a severely sprained ankle healed itself in minutes by instantly surrendering the pain. Healing of vision. One evening, while giving a lecture on the mechanism of surrender and making note of all the above healings which had been experienced, a member of the audience said, "Doctor, if you healed all of those ailments, then why do you still wear glasses? Couldn't poor eyesight be healed the same way?" "Well, I never thought of wearing glasses as a disease. I always thought of it as an anatomical structural defect of the body. But now that you mention it, I don't see any reason why that shouldn't heal." So the bifocals were removed and stowed in a coat pocket. Indeed, at that time, eyesight was declining to the point that trifocals had been prescribed and ordered. In leaving the lecture that evening, the same inner knowingness came that the condition would heal itself with sufficient faith and trust. Driving home without glasses, vision was blurred. The pace was slow, with headlights on the curb. There was an inner knowingness that we would always see what we needed to see, but unable to see what we wanted to see. During the next 6 weeks, a great deal was observed and learned about what goes on behind our everyday, ordinary seeing. There is a whole myriad of feelings, varying from curiosity to competition, to erotic interest, to intellectual titillation. Only about 5% of our vision is absolutely necessary to function in the world. A peculiar phenomenon occurred. Only that which was necessary to see was seen. Reading newspapers and magazines, watching television, or going to the movies were all impossible. It became clear how most of vision is merely escapism. On the road, it was as if Mr. Magoo were behind the wheel. Again and again, that same mysterious phenomenon would occur. As soon as it was vital to see something, that's when it would be seen. The edge of the cliff was made visible just as it was necessary to see it. There was a great deal of anxiety, with a constant surrendering of fear. Finally, by the end of 6 weeks, the fear seemed to run out. Instead, a deep surrender took place. Well, I will only see that which I am allowed to see. The other emotional objectives, which seeing had subserved up to that time, were willingly surrendered. Then, a profound sense of inner stillness and peace occurred, and a feeling of oneness with whatever it is that runs the universe. And in that instant, suddenly, vision returned totally and perfectly. What had not been visible or readable now was crystal clear. Street signs, fine print in dim light, objects in great detail across the room and at great distance. At the next eye test for a driving license renewal, the evaluator said that the vision was perfect and that glasses would no longer be required. This had never occurred on any previous eye test. Since telling this story around the country, quite a number of other people have taken off their glasses and gone through the same experience. Interestingly enough, each one said that it took about 6 weeks. One of the people who accomplished this decided to put his glasses on again. When asked the reason, he said that his wife was so used to seeing him with glasses that he looked homely without them, and so he put on blank ones in order to please her. He did it just because he loved her and wanted to make her happy, which is a very different reason than having to wear glasses because of impaired vision. Those of us who have had the experience of healed vision agree on one discovery. It is with the mind itself that we see, not the eyeballs. Recently, one of the cases was a woman who had been blind since shortly after birth and had gross derangements of both eyeballs. After hearing the lecture on recovery of vision, she pursued a medical protocol and practiced the letting-go technique on her sight. Within 2 days, she began to experience a return of vision. She came up after the lecture and said, "I know you are right. I know that one sees through the mind because that is what is happening to me. I am seeing, and I am seeing with my mind." To understand how all of these healings can come about, some of them verging on the miraculous, we have to revise many of our thoughts about bodily processes, the mechanisms of healing, and how medical treatments bring about their results. It was discovered that there is a self-healing power within that is activated by continual surrender. Chapter 21. Questions and Answers. This chapter includes verbatim questions and answers from workshops and seminars that have been given around the world in recent years. In anticipation of the reader's questions, the most typical and frequently asked questions about the mechanism of surrender have been included. Religious and spiritual goals. There are always a number of questions regarding the application of surrender to achieving what are generally referred to as spiritual goals, expansion of consciousness, and religious beliefs? We can answer many of these questions by making a general statement. The letting go mechanism does not conflict with any religion or spiritual pathway or self-improvement program, nor does it disagree with any philosophy or metaphysical position. It entails no spiritual teachings of its own. Instead, it provides a mechanism so that self-understanding removes the blocks to spiritual advancement. It is also compatible with the humanistic movement. All spiritual pathways and religions emphasize the need for expanding our capacity to love, and this is essentially what the process of surrender is all about. By removing the blocks to love, the capacity to love self, others, and God is expanded. Surrender also facilitates the basic teachings of all the world's great religions. The essential goal of these teachings is to surrender the small self, commonly called ego. The letting go technique facilitates the goal of dissolving the small self by using a simple inner process of surrender. When the small self is transcended, the true inner self shines forth. Let us take, for instance, the most common short means of expression of this surrendering phenomenon as given by most religions. Typically, they follow this pattern: let go and let God. Be still and know that I am God. Turn your life and will over to the care of God as you understand Him. Surrender to what is, for God is in all things. It is obvious that letting go of negativity facilitates the very direction that all religions and spiritual pathways urge us to take. The process of letting go is concerned primarily with feelings, and we have seen that feelings have a profound effect on our thoughts and belief systems. The experience of most people who use the mechanism of surrender is that it facilitates their spiritual and religious goals. Those who do not consciously have any religious or spiritual goals have remarked that it facilitates their capacity for lovingness, which substantially increases their happiness and well-being. Carl Jung pointed out that because God is one of the major archetypes in the unconscious, each person has to take a position about God, whether they like it or not. Even the atheist has feelings about the concept of God. So whether God exists or not, the subject has to be dealt with sooner or later. Suppressing our feelings about God, or consciously being overwhelmed by the subject, is not a satisfactory solution. The letting go technique brings resolution to long-standing inner conflicts, both to the atheist and to the believer. Question: what is the relationship of letting go to the whole concept of sin? Answer: if we examine the negative feelings that we have been discussing and describe them in religious terminology, we see that what we have really been describing are the so-called cardinal sins. Inasmuch as the mechanism of surrender is a way of letting them go, it seems obvious that letting go of the attachment to these characteristics facilitates the achievement of religious teachings in our personal life. Question: I am not a follower of any particular spiritual pathway, but have my own personal pathway. How could this technique be helpful? Answer: without exception, all spiritual pathways are based upon a method of dissolving the ego. The ego includes the totality of our negative programs. Surrendering is the process par excellence for letting go of negative programs. It is, therefore, the best tool to facilitate spiritual understanding. Question: will this process interfere in any way with my faith? Answer: on the contrary, what are the obstacles to faith? You will notice that they are all forms of negativity. Consequently, letting go of negativity would be removing the obstacles to faith. Question: I am a non-believer, but I do have an interest in learning about spiritual matters. Would this approach be of any use to me? Answer. The mechanism of surrender is a tool only. You can use it to remove the obstacles to making $1 million, or you can use it to remove the obstacles to the development of spiritual awareness. Most people who continuously surrender report that they discover something within themselves akin to love itself, which is independent of the body, emotions, thoughts, and the events of the world. Have you ever heard of anyone becoming displeased by this discovery? Question. Does the letting go technique contradict any spiritual or religious teachings? Answer. A study of the subject reveals that there is no conflict between the letting go of negativity and any spiritual teaching. Question. I gave up religion many years ago because it created so much guilt I couldn't handle it. What would be the effect of using the letting go technique? Answer. In clinical observations over the years, guilt emerges as the most frequent reason for which people give up their religion. It is because the goals seem unobtainable. Ask yourself, what has made these goals seem unobtainable? It will always be the disparity between what one is taught they should be as compared to what they perceive they really are. Instead of feeling guilty, try letting go of all the negative feelings that come up and wait and see for yourself what change of attitudes might occur. Again, letting go is a tool. It can be utilized to facilitate your goals in any area of life. How you use it is up to you. A good place to start is to let go of all of your guilt, since it fosters an emotional environment for suffering and disease. Meditation and inner techniques. Question. How does letting go and surrendering correlate with the different meditative techniques? Answer. Almost all meditative techniques have as their goal the quieting of the mind. This is the basis of the dictum from the Book of Psalms. Be still and know that I am God. As most meditators have discovered, achieving silence of the mind is the main problem of meditation itself. This is because suppressed feelings constantly produce thoughts, which are the main distractions in meditation. Acknowledging and letting go of the energy behind these suppressed feelings, therefore, facilitates the goal of meditation. When the feeling behind the train of thoughts is located and surrendered, then that entire train of thought instantly stops. By constantly surrendering, it is possible to arrive at an extremely silent state of mind. This can be accomplished as one goes about one's daily activities, thus greatly expanding the capacity to meditate. Most meditative techniques are limited to a specified number of minutes or hours during the day. It is possible, by constant surrender, to reach high states of consciousness. Question. I do not follow a spiritual pathway, but I do affirmations and visualizations. Will the letting go technique be of use to me? Answer. Letting go greatly facilitates the power of affirmations. An affirmation is a positive statement. Its power is limited by the fact that either consciously or unconsciously, we have multiple negative programs that are saying the very opposite thing to the affirmation. You can discover this for yourself by noticing that as you write the affirmations, your mind comes up with, "Yeah, but." It is these "yeah, buts" that limit the power of the affirmation and reduce its effectiveness. If you surrender the obstacles to the affirmation, you will notice a rapid increase in their effectiveness. Psychotherapy. Question. I am in psychoanalysis. Would the letting go technique be helpful, or would it be in conflict with my analysis, which is getting progressively more expensive? Answer. Therapists who have studied the technique agree with it. Many psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists have learned it and utilize it in their practices. So far, we have heard only 100% positive evaluations of the results. because the so-called working through is facilitated by the patient's capacity to let go of negativity and self-limitations, which allows the therapy to move forward much more rapidly. Psychotherapists themselves have found that letting go has greatly facilitated their understanding of patients and the resolution of countertransference. If therapists know how to acknowledge and let go of negative feelings, then they can avoid the development of many stress-related illnesses during the course of their practice. Thus, the technique is considered to be of assistance in psychotherapy, increasing its effectiveness and the satisfactoriness of its outcome. Question: I am in group psychotherapy. How would that work with the mechanism of surrender? Answer: just as in individual psychotherapy, the capability of surrendering one's inner negative feelings greatly facilitates group work. Question: I am a Jungian analyst. Would this approach fit in with my work? Answer: through surrender, we can free ourselves from being at the effect of the archetypes. The archetypes are obviously a collection of beliefs and feelings, and are, therefore, programs like any other. The individual who uses the mechanism of surrender to let go of programmed beliefs and feelings has the power of choice over the archetypal patterns, rather than unconsciously being run by them. Alcoholism and drug addiction. Question: I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, and I would like to know if others in AA have benefited from this technique. Answer: the common experience is that the technique of letting go greatly facilitates working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially the third step. The third step states, "Made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him." This very step is frustrating to many people in AA because there is no how-to. Just how do you turn your will and life over to the care of God or some higher power? If we look at will, we see that it is desire. This desire is connected to attachments. The mechanism of surrender, therefore, facilitates freedom from attachments and is almost equal to the third step in its intention. Surrendering to God means letting go of one's willfulness. Willfulness is the ego itself. The obsession to drink is a drivenness, a compulsion due to an attachment. This can be weakened and lessened by the process of surrendering. Drinking is also an escape from the pain of negative feelings. Therefore, letting go of negative feelings decreases the psychological need for escape in that particular form. This applies to other drugs as well, which are all attempts to replace a lower feeling with a higher feeling. The letting go technique does not replace the need for self-help groups or for Alcoholics Anonymous. However, it greatly facilitates success in recovery programs and is certainly compatible with all the anonymous groups, which are based uniformly on the 12 steps. Relationships. Question: I've been on a spiritual path for many years and do not understand why I still experience negative emotions. Answer: there's a common illusion that spiritually evolved, loving people never have any negativity, as though they are already angelic. They get annoyed that they still have negative feelings, and then it's compounded by their guilt and self-frustration. They have to realize that feelings are transitory, whereas their intention to evolve remains constant. Let go of feeling guilty that you are still just an ordinary human, despite your angelic ambitions. Having compassion toward your innate humanness, its nervous system, and the brain function that goes with it, allows for greater equanimity. Heavenly ambitions do not necessarily make us angels. Question: I have a colleague at work who doesn't carry his load. Every time I see him, I feel resentful. Then I feel guilty for resenting him. How would I begin the letting go technique in that situation? Answer. We notice and accept what our feelings are about a situation, and then we proceed to clear them as a priority rather than indulge in emotionality. In the workplace, many people think they should suppress their feelings of resentment. However, this approach does not handle the problem, and the tensions will fester. With the letting go technique, go within yourself and acknowledge the negative feelings as they arise. Let them come up without suppressing them and without venting them, and then shift your attention from the feelings to something else. Let the feelings be there and let them go. Question. You recommend that we shift attention away from the negative feeling. How is this different from repressing the feeling? Answer. Repression is an unconscious process by which unaccepted feelings are put out of awareness and not dealt with. In shifting attention, you make a choice not to indulge the negative emotion. You have already acknowledged and accepted the feeling within yourself as part of being human, but you are choosing to let it go because you want something higher, like peacefulness, harmony, and getting the job done. People will sometimes shift their attention by way of actions such as rearranging the furniture a little bit, opening and closing the window shades, making a quick trip to the bathroom, or going for a short coffee break. These actions allow for a moment to shift from the negative to the positive. Question. I notice there are certain feelings that seem to recur frequently, even though I use the method with regularity. Answer. The frequent recurrence of negative feelings would indicate the necessity for a period of contemplation about recurrent patterns. For instance, the manner of handling negative emotions may follow parental or family patterns, as well as cultural ones. There is a wide variation among cultures in how to handle feelings. So look at the unconscious underlying patterns going on with your emotional response and let go of those patterns. Question. What if a negative feeling towards someone or a situation persists despite my intention and effort to let it go? Answer. Sometimes one is more or less forced to surrender to a situation and presume that it's karmic. With spiritual research, one finds out that it is indeed karmic. Let's say you are paying off the karma of being mean to a lot of people. Now you get a chance to see what it's like to have people be mean to you. Sometimes the only reasonable thing left to do is to surrender to karmic patterns. You don't have to believe in karma as a religious doctrine in order to make this step. It's simply accepting the basic law of human interactions that what goes around comes around, and most of us have not always been saints. Question. I'm a teacher, and sometimes there are students who annoy me. As their teacher, I want to get over the annoyance so I can be helpful to them. What do you recommend? Answer. First, accept the fact that you are annoyed and that it's okay to be annoyed. It's the price of human consciousness. Let the annoyance come up fully without calling it anything or making it personal. Instead of resisting it, you ask for more of it. See that it's simply the energy of negativity. That observation depersonalizes it. Then ask yourself, are you willing to let go of this energy? Often, the energy will lift. Question. I have a good marriage, but there are moments of annoyance, frustration, and disagreement. How do I deal with feeling frustrated and annoyed at my spouse? Answer. We've already said that it's okay to be annoyed. That is part of being human. What you do is become familiar with what the other person is processing and their style of expression. There are often different attitudes and preferences. Very common differences are preferences over room temperature, volume settings, and how to spend money. The key is to let go of being judgmental of the other person's preferences or feeling prideful about your own as the right way. Each accepts the humanness of the other, and that, of course, there are sometimes going to be different attitudes. Question. Such seemingly minor differences often lead to the downfall of a relationship, because people blame the other person or want to change their behavior. How can they live peacefully instead? Answer. You just accept that all relationships have their ups and downs. You have to have a sense of humor about the human condition itself and its seeming contradictions and paradoxes. You want the other person to be happy and comfortable, and you know that you are happy and comfortable when they are happy and comfortable. There is a mutual alignment with a peaceful lifestyle. Let go of judging, blaming, and controlling the other. Let go of expecting them to be different than they are. We all have our foibles. It can be sort of fun to make a list of your own foibles. There can be a decision not to focus on negativity in one's environment or a relationship. People can tolerate tensions and differences for variable periods of time, and at different ages, you can tolerate things more or less. Question. What about the negative emotions that come up for parents when dealing with children? Answer. Tolerance for children's behaviors varies depending on cultural context, gender, age, moral views, and other factors. You put up with things in kindergarten that you don't tolerate in third grade. It is common for parents to have to let go of expectations of their children. What's it like for an expert musician to have a child with no musical skill or inclination? Expectations are subtle pressures on the other person who will then unconsciously resist. In parenting, you want to relinquish expectations and personal favoritisms. If you're an expert at billiards, can you let go of being disappointed that your kid is lousy at shooting pool? Another common issue is overparenting. Sometimes a parent confuses loving a grown child with bailing them out of every difficulty. At a certain age, sometimes love means tough love. That is, letting the child find his own way out of the mess he made so that he has the opportunity to discover his own inner resources. Question. If I let go of a lot of guilt, wouldn't the technique result in promiscuity? Answer. On the contrary, promiscuity is based on low self-esteem, exploitation, and lack of love. The letting go of negativity and selfishness, concern for others, a heightened pleasure from their company, and higher self-esteem changes one's perspective of relationships. The capacity for lovingness increases rapidly. Much of promiscuity is an attempt to overcome unconscious fears and seek reassurance. These can all be let go of so that more mature relationships take their place. Question. I have been going to sex therapy, which is based on behavioral retraining. Would that be compatible? Answer. There is no incompatibility. Behavioral retraining is an attempt to replace negative programs with positive ones. Essentially, it is replacing "I can't" with "I can." That is what this technique of letting go is all about. Question. Will the letting go technique cure impotence or frigidity? Answer. It is not a cure for anything. It is a self-investigative technique that rapidly opens up awareness of inner feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. Both frigidity and impotency are statements on the behavioral level of "I can't," which in the unconscious means "I won't." They are both resistances to joy, love, expression, and aliveness. The most common causes are repressed guilt, fear, and anger, emotions that spill out through the autonomic nervous system. Impotence and frigidity are expressions of conflict. Most people who use the letting go technique report overall improvements in their sexual life in a variety of ways, and many have reported recovery from sexual inhibitions. Likewise, Many have also reported the relief from sexual excessiveness and excessive preoccupation with the subject. Question: how does the mechanism of surrender relate to the process of aging? Answer: it facilitates graceful aging. Getting older brings a big change in your lifestyle. Often, there is a decline in vision, hearing, and mobility, which means you are increasingly dependent on the care of others for things that you accomplished previously without a second thought. Old age can be annoying. Suddenly, you are incompetent in areas where you once excelled. As you let go of feeling annoyed, however, you see that the incapacities of old age serve a purpose. They get you ready to leave the world. If you were still involved as a star in some area of life, you'd resent leaving the world. You wouldn't be very graceful about it. As you decline, it gives you time to adjust, get used to the fact that you'll be leaving, and do any spiritual work that you want to have completed by the time you leave here. When you surrender to the process of aging as simply part of the human condition, you come to peace with it. You become more loving and appreciative of other people's love and care for you. The more loving you become, you see that everybody is trying to be helpful to you, and it is loving to allow them to be helpful to you. People think, "Oh, I'm being selfish if I allow somebody to be helpful to my life." Actually, it's being generous. Generosity is the willingness to share your life with others. It's a gift to people to allow them to love you. The mechanism. Question: how can surrendering be more constant? Answer: the secret to using this mechanism more often and more consistently is, first of all, the wish to do so. That is step one. You have to want to be free of the feeling more than you want to keep it. Sometimes it is just a matter of remembering, and you can use some kind of a cue card to remind you. Another way is to establish a routine. It is very good to start the day by surrendering your thoughts and feelings about your expectations, to picture the way you would like it to go, and to let go of all negative thoughts that would interfere with the day going in that way. Then at the end of the day, sit down and surrender anything that came up during the course of the day that you overlooked or didn't have time to pay attention to. This is called cleaning up, and most people find that they sleep better. Another way is to keep a notebook where you write down your successes. You might put down the goal of constant surrendering and follow it up with what the results were. Another way is to let go of your resistance to surrendering and, as you start the day, reaffirm your intention to let go of all negativity that day. You also reaffirm that you are free not to surrender. After all, it is totally a matter of choice. Let go of any feeling of compulsion about it. There isn't any should. Question: what do you think is the most frequent cause for our resistance to surrender? Answer: we think that somehow, if we hang on to that feeling, it is going to get us what we want. If we get stuck in a feeling, it is useful to look at the question of what we think we have accomplished by hanging on to it. We will almost always find that we have a fantasy that it will have some effect on some other person and change their behavior or attitudes toward us. If we let go of that, we become willing to let go of the feeling. Question: if I surrender all the time, won't I just become passive? Answer: on the contrary, surrendering will clear the decks for effective action. Passivity is often because of inhibition and a failure to see alternate ways to handle a situation. For instance, a person will say, "In the conference, he got me so mad I just sat there and said nothing." Now, it's rather clear what the problem is. The saying nothing was due to the anger and the person's picturing that the only emotional response he could make would be anger. Since this would be inappropriate in a business situation, he said nothing. Had the anger been let go, the person could have been confidently assertive and stated his opinion instead of clamming up. Question. In therapy, I learned how to express anger, and I think it is a very useful thing. Do I have to give it up? Answer. If you look at anger, you will see that its basis is almost always fear. We get angry because we have been threatened. The threat arouses fear. The fear means we feel that we are unequal to the situation. Anger biologically is like swelling up to intimidate our opponent. Anger is coming from weakness rather than strength. The person who has surrendered is therefore relying on strength rather than weakness. The person who has surrendered does not have to fall back upon anger to handle a situation. Also, anger cannot be counted upon. In addition, it has many destructive effects. For example, it is running you instead of your running it. A totally surrendered person is free to choose to express anger if they wish, but it is done out of choice, not out of necessity. Anger, especially chronic anger, has deleterious effects on the body organs, and research in psychosomatic medicine has indicated that repressed anger is associated with hypertension, arthritis, and a variety of other diseases. Question. You mentioned that surrender is a natural psychological mechanism of the mind. If that is so, how come we have to learn how to do it? Answer. Although it is true that surrender, or letting go, is a natural mechanism of the mind, it must be remembered that the mind has multiple conflicting motivations. Whereas one part of your mind would like to be free of the tension from a feeling, another part of your mind is programmed to believe that hanging on to the feeling will somehow magically bring about